Okay, Brendan Devaney, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you, my friend?
What about you, lad?
I'm good. A week's a long time in football, isn't it? Last week we were walking around the minefield, I suppose you could call it, of Termon v St Unions, and here we are a week later, and Termon losing out, and they put up a fantastic battle, didn't they? But I suppose, you know, at the end of the day, it was Niamh Connell that pushed on and got that victory in the end.
Yeah, amazing effort from Termon. You'd have to faint some, Greg. This sport can be cruel at times. I mean, if you're looking 56 minutes on the clock, 6 points up, you were thinking another unbelievable victory for them. Yeah, but listen, this is the game of Gaelic football. Things can change quick, and somehow Niamh Connell came right back and got that goal, and then Bimba Rody getting the winner. It's amazing scenes, and tough on them. But listen, as you said, that's the game it is, 2-12 to 2-11.
Yeah, and even in the club game, you need depth in the squad, don't you?
Yeah, certainly. And particularly as the game opens up, I suppose it's the advantage of what you call some of the stronger clubs, that they're year in, year out, if they're there or thereabouts, they tend to have options on the bench to come in and make a difference. And it's always a dangerous thing. But that said, like, you know, with time closing down, you would have seen there was only one winner there, but you know, you'd have to say fair play to Niamh Connell for digging deep and making it in yet another semi.
Four Masters seemed comfortable against Dunlawfin. Maybe the scoreline doesn't tell the full story, but just reading it, 20 points to 10. They've booked their place in the last four.
Yeah, some of these games, you know, they seem a wee bit tactical. I know conditions have changed about the last couple of weeks, and that it took a while to get going, that game, but we were last week talking about it, you know, very little between these teams. They played a couple of weeks ago, they drew. It was a late two-pointer from Dunlow to clinch a draw in the dying moment, so we couldn't really pick between it. So for it to end up the way it did, for Masters to pull away, they did. And we've spoken many times about this common team of Four Masters. Was this going to be a year or two too early for them? Well, I think Barry Dunion and his team have maybe other designs on that. So yeah, Niamh Connell now coming down the tracks in their semi-final. And this Four Masters side just seem to be getting better and better. And one thing that they have, Greg, is a vast array of scorers. So if you can get your defensive shape, if you can, you know, get your team into a position to hold the opposition, if you have players breaking with serious talents, they have, you're going to be a danger. But very surprised at the large victory, double scores. Anyway, no one's seen that coming. Fair play to Four Masters.
Yeah, indeed. It's going to make for an interesting last four. And in that last four, St Michael's, by all accounts, Michael Langan, the man of the match, the talisman for St Michael's on the day, to see them past a decent Sean McCool's side.
Yeah, I mean, what a talent Langan is. Greg, listen, been talking about him ever since I first seen him. You could just see he was just going to be one of the best footballers I've ever seen. He just has all the talents of the day. And listen, St Michael's were knocking on the door last year, semi-finalists. You know, maybe a lot of people weren't talking about them much, particularly because they lost their opening game to McCool's. And I think a lot of people then automatically, it's funny the first game, like the way it makes you think about the team in terms of saying where they're going to be. And really, it was one match, and of course Langan wasn't playing. Big thing, probably Oisin Gallen wasn't playing, Greg, and we spoke about this last week. One week, pick up an injury, particularly to one of your key men, and listen, there's nobody probably as key to any team. Probably Langan and Gallen are very similar in what they do to McCool's and St Michael's. So huge, huge loss for him not to be there. I mean, because McCool's had a fantastic season up to this point, but you're right, Langan be 10 points. You know, when you look at 26 to 15, the end score, he was the difference between the teams. And McCool's, unfortunately, sadly lacking Mr. Gallen's.
Yeah, indeed. So the finals then, we mentioned Gwydor coming through, did we? Maybe we didn't.
No, we didn't.
Yeah, Gwydor overcoming Kilcar by 3 points.
That's what let me away with that one, Greg.
No.
we have to keep the Gwydor men in the front of our view. Listen, we covered that game myself in Park. Was down Saturday evening. Conditions was tough, but a great championship game. And defensively, you look at the coaching of Gwydor, you know, they're a very physically strong team. I mean, Kilcar, in fairness, never give it up. They come back at them, Gwydor, 5 points up with maybe 4 or 5 minutes to go. And again, Kilcar come back, got a goal, Paddy Verdi goal, and we're right in the game, but Gwydor pulling away. Got a late two-pointer from Rorty, but it was interesting, like, the funnel, you know, the lights, great down there, the pitch was great, but of course it's a bit of a bottleneck. So all these people were leaving at the end trying to beat the traffic because the game looked over, and I was in cover thinking, hold on a second, let's get over. You need to put on the handbrake and go back, because this game came right. Like every game we're seeing, like, if there's not a lot in it, you know, with top players in the pitch like Pat and Birdie, there's always a chance you can go back in. And certainly at one stage, there was a chance for a two-pointer later on, but it would have equalised it before Gidor pulled away. So certainly, yeah, awesome performance by Gidor all over the pitch. And they probably, for me, haven't seen all the teams of the weekend, probably a slight fancy for them, but listen, 1 and 2 of them still, and Niamh Connell, but I'm sure.
Right, so let's look at the semis then, and it's coming thick and fast now. So it's Gwydor, St. Michael's. You're favouring the Gwydor men in that semi?
Listen, I just think all in all, yeah, from what I've seen this season, probably, and listen, again, even though Niamh Connell came through there when they looked, they were out, you still experience again, you think, when you get to semi-final stage. But I suppose there's a buzz about Four Masters. That going on a run, I suppose, it gives you huge confidence. And the way they won that match, it'll give them massive confidence, as well as St. Michael's.
It's going to really show Four Masters where they are against this team, isn't it? You know what I mean? You're talking about them coming on and they're coming on. But this game will actually really give us a really strong indication of where they are at.
Certainly, and you know, no matter what, and I suppose they won't want to hear that in terms of progression, because they are, all these games are going to lead to extra experience for them, and that's why you look at the experienced teams and you think in these moments, and we mentioned squads and all that as well, but they've been there and done it, and that can add a lot. But then on the other flip side of that, you've got a team playing complete without fear, and these Four Masters lads coming through underage and at college's level, the only thing they're used to is winning. So. Yeah. They're not going to be afraid of the challenge. So yes, it's two cracking semis, Eric, but I would give a slight fancy to Gidor and Niamh Connell. But
great. That's the great thing about sport, because there's counter arguments to that as well, and that's what makes the whole thing so fascinating. Senior Football Championship relegation playoff, St. Noel's losing out to Ardrah. There was a victory for Niamh Columba over Red Hughes in the Intermediate Football Championship semi-final, and there was
another one there, Greg.
Where's that, sorry?
Fallon came through on the other.
Oh, yeah, they beat Niamh Mora, didn't they? Or was it Niamh Mora? Yeah.
Niamh Mora is right, yes, right. Greg. And then the ladies there, Fallon are the intermediate champions, and Terman and Glenfinn are into the senior final. So, yeah, a lot to discuss this evening.
Exactly. Right, so you're going to be talking of all the major talking points, of course. You've got Maureen O'Donnell on, which is great, John Gilday, and Oney McGarvey as well. So that's a pretty tasty lineup for the show this evening.
Yeah, Oney McGarvey, of course, he is the coach of Niamh Mora as well. So we'll have him on to talk. Yeah, so listen, we're good to have Mo on. We'll do a bit of roundup of the ladies. Of course, we'll talk about all the championships, junior, intermediate, and senior as well. So
it was funny last week. I was down then at the Garda Awards on Tuesday night. The man's name's going to escape me now anyway. But anyway, I was got Sean Patton up on stage, right? So I was chatting to him. And then in pure ignorance, I asked him about the game, if I thought the player, the defender was, his defenders were sort of had an eye on the player who's leaving the, you know, who was sitting directly in front of us at the table, the ref. And I didn't know that. Yeah, the ref's the general manager of Supermax, who was, Supermax in Donegal Town. So I found myself, and in fairness, both great lads, and there was no issue at all. But they must have thought I had this all planned, you know, that I was going to ask this pointed question with the ref sitting at the table in front. But anyway, we got through it. And both of them said they weren't really big talkers, but both did fantastic then when they were chatting to, which was, so I just thought it was a funny little quirk.
Yeah, and listen, Sean's a great talker. I'm sure he would have handled it well, Greg.
Oh, no, 100%. But, like, when he says he pointed at the ref, I was like, oh, my God, I didn't know that. But anyway, as you say, good talker. Right, anyway, you've got a brilliant lineup this evening. Lots to talk about, not just the seniors, but the other competitions and the ladies as well. That's live just after the 7 o'clock news tonight, Brendan.
Thanks, Greg. Much appreciated.
Take care of yourself. Podcast 2 as well. For you to listen at your leisure. We are going to be resolving a little issue that we're having if you're watching the stream, and thanks for bearing with us. We figured out there's a slight technical issue with our desk, so that needs to be resolved for Brendan's show tonight as well, but also for this show tomorrow. But thanks for bearing with us. Thanks for letting us know. We do really appreciate it. But in Radio Land, it's all coming through perfectly fine as well, so it's all good. Right, let me see. Shall I take a break or a couple of comments? I'll do comments. Actual medical science isn't being manipulated by governments. You are being manipulated by con men, con women. As long as what we decide to do doesn't cost people's lives. Like, you know, I know there was an awful lot of controversy in relation to COVID jabs. And you know what? There's very strong evidence that those that were warning of certain things in the end were proven right. But what's happening now is there's a growing distrust of vaccines that have been used for multiples of generations that stop kids getting very sick or save their lives or what have you. And now people are sort of lumping that in there as well. And we really need to be careful that we are thinking critically, you know, and some of yous were better at that than I, but also think critically to the point whereby we can differentiate between something that is proven and is useful, and that's a good understanding of a condition or a disease, and what is effectively being lumped in with something else. I don't know the answer to all of that, but we just really need to be careful, I think. A caller says, Sinn Féin has missed a great opportunity by not supporting Heather Humphreys. It would have been a great show of inclusivity to the unionist people of Northern Ireland. The United Ireland is for everyone, but I suppose Sinn Féin can, they would feel that they can demonstrate that through Catherine Murphy. Is it Catherine Donald Connolly? Sorry, beg your pardon. It'll be interesting to see how she gets on. 7 years is a long, long term as well. Maybe that should be reduced down a little bit. Let me take a break because we've got more guests just around the corner. And on this morning's Monday Focus, we look at the Eye Care Centre in Inishowen celebrating its 25th anniversary. Doreen Friels, a founding chair, person of Eye Care and current chairperson of the Board of Directors. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg.
How are you getting on?
We're getting on good.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Bernie Galligan, founding vice chair of Eye Care and current vice secretary of Eye Care and parent to an Eye Adult Service user. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning, Greg. How are you?
Great, and it's great to have you with us. Right, so Doreen, talk to me about Eye Care, and I suppose maybe start with the gaps that were there and you know, why this was established to try and plug those gaps.
Well, Greg, I suppose you're going back now 25 years, and prior to that, there was very, very little knowledge of or information about autism, to tell you the truth. So my son was diagnosed as autistic when he was 2.5, and I was told at the time that he was the second person in Inishowen to be diagnosed. And I went shopping, looking for something in a shop up the street one day, and I met another parent who was on a very similar journey to myself, and we got chatting. And I suppose it became clear that there seemed to be a group of people around Buncrana and Inishowen who were starting on the same journey, or who had come home from maybe America with a child who had been diagnosed over there. So the HSE at the time, Don McDwyer was there, and he had a huge interest in autism. We were very lucky that way. And he, anyway, there was a symposium organised in Galway, and myself and another lady, Adele McGonigal, went down to the symposium with a couple of autism therapists from Don McDwyer's service. And it became very, very clear to us when we were there that our children were not getting what other children might have been getting throughout the country. And I suppose that day we decided there and then that we would do something about it.
That when you talk about, you know, one or two children being diagnosed at that time, was it the fact that parents were seeking diagnoses but no services were available, or were children with autism at that time being categorised as something else? I mean, what was going on?
That's a good question, and it was put to me at one stage that the reason that there weren't more people diagnosed was because there was no service for them, and you couldn't really diagnose people with a condition and then say, away you go, we don't have anything for you. So I don't know, Greg, but that's what we were told at the time. We all sort of knew each other then through maybe speech therapy, going to different things. And ended up, there was a group of seven of us who knew, got to know each other, and we decided that we would do something for our children. And iCare was born, and we had our first meeting in somebody's house at the start. That's where we met, and went from there, really. And you can tell, like, we've had absolutely huge support from our community, and Inishowen, I mean, to survive 25 years as a testament, I suppose, to the community and to the Fountain parents and all the parents who've joined along the way. And so here we are 25 years later, hard to believe, Greg.
Bernie Galligan, what always amazes me about these community movements, it's that it's not necessarily the state or arms of the state or the health board or whatever that sort of recognises a problem and tries to put something together forward. It's the people probably with the least amount of time and the most on their plates, i.e., you know, mums and dads, primarily mums perhaps, that say, right, you know, we need to do something for our children. You know, it's fantastic, but it's kind of a shame that it has to be that way too.
Yeah, it often happens, Greg, but, you know, when you're in that sort of a situation, you don't have any answers, you don't have the support, you don't have any alternative. It's like any situation, you have to do something about it. And if it means just getting a group of people together and trying to get something running, then why not? You don't have the choice. You have to do something. Mm. And I mean, Doreen alluded there to the brilliant support that we've had from the community and has shown over the years, and I second that. But as well as that, we've had good support from fellow parents. We keep one another sane, probably would have been the word back in the day, yeah. To be quite honest with you. When the help wasn't there, you did need...
There must have been some... Now, this doesn't necessarily take away what one might be going through, but there must have been some solace that rather than individual people going through an experience that it felt very isolating, that once you were in the company of other people and talking with other people that got your situation, got your kids, that must have been huge.
Absolutely. I can't explain to you how isolating it can be.
Yeah.
Because if you have a child that has difficulties with social situations, it might mean you can't go to the shop in peace and quiet. You can't go to the restaurants. There's a lot of things that you can't do easily. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can do it, but you need a lot of help and support.
It's like military planning required.
Absolutely.
Almost, yeah.
So it can isolate you.
Not to mention also having to maybe deal with a misunderstanding from other people.
Oh, that happens.
You have to get quite a thick skin, wouldn't you, whereby...
Well, that was one of the main reasons. You know, one of our main goals at the start, Greg, wasn't just to get the best that we could possibly get for our children. It was to raise awareness and understanding of autism. Mm. Because you're going back 25 or more years, and really, there was very little talk about autism at the time, and people didn't understand it. We didn't understand it ourselves. But just to go back to your point about, you know, the solidarity, you know, we found in each other, we found it in the community as well. Like, we approached Sinead McLaughlin and Skylise again. Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We approached the IDP. Yes, the support that we got from everybody, just we knew that everybody's with us, and we knew that everybody could see that this was the right thing to do. And I understand, you know, it shouldn't have been left to a group of parents, but at the same time, we knew our children better than anybody. You know, my son didn't need what Bernie's son needed. Bernie's son didn't need
so you were able to develop something then really from scratch that maybe was better than potentially what could have been enforced upon you, even though it might have been deemed as good news.
Yeah.
So what then in the very early stages, because there's no way we can cover 25 years of history in a short chat, but what did you sort of set out as a goal in those early stages? In terms of even maybe a building, how that might be funded, you know, the nightmare it is to try and apply for funding, and or how generous might the local community actually be in achieving the goals that were being set out. Doreen, can you give us a sense of that?
Yeah, I suppose, Greg, you know, our very first mission statement was iCare exists to provide a framework within which families, professionals, autistic people can achieve what they need to achieve, get everything they needed. We needed a school that would provide and embrace the methodologies that our children needed. And we needed speech therapy, we needed occupational therapy, we needed, and sensory integration was just, people hadn't even heard of it. It was only starting to become a thing. And we had to raise money to get all of those things in place. When we set out as a sort of support group for ourselves and to get the very best for the children. At that stage, we didn't have a vision for a building, a site or anything like that. That came later. So in those initial stages, we wanted our children to have access to every single thing that other children in the community had. Mm. That was the goal.
But it was early enough on. Like, it's within 7 years, you'd established a centre effectively in Buncrana. So things moved quickly. I mean, again, we're kind of brushing over 7 years of a lot of stress and planning and funding and everything. But things moved really, really quickly, more quickly than they might if it was something you were trying to apply through from the government or the HSC. Then 2013, that's another key date, isn't it? That's the purchase of land where the current building is located. Is that right?
Yeah. And like that was all down to Angela Turris. You've interviewed Angela many times.
How she kept going.
No, I don't know how she kept going either. And in fairness to Angela and a strong committee behind her and other parents as well. But like Angela had a vision at that stage and really she did Trojan work for years and acquired the site with the committee and all the rest of it. And with local landlords as well, like who were, you know, sympathetic and on board. Mm. And so we were very lucky that way. And we're very lucky now to own our site.
Where are you at financially now? Because I know, and this is where it can get very draining. You know, you're trying to provide the services, you're trying to argue for your children, and then you're trying to fill out every form, get involved in media campaigns to try and get enough money just to do the basics, right? And then there was this period of time going back, I don't know how long ago it was, 5 or 6 or 7 years, you know, battling for this 50 grand. It seemed to be a 50,000 figure that you guys got and then Bluestack got, but there's no certainty about it. There's no planning. And it was like, you know, this euphoria and then this disappointment and on it goes. So where are you at now in terms of funding the services? And I want to talk a bit more to Bernie about iAdult in a second, but just curious as to what financial footing you're on now.
Well, we're a lot better off now than we were. If you had us in here a month ago, Greg, you've heard the recent announcement. The HSE recognise the service that we provide and have agreed to €200,000 every year going forward. That's a huge weight off our shoulders. And we don't mean to seem flippant about that or anything else, but it takes more than that to run out there.
Of course,
And the community has sustained us. Like up until that, it was sort of 40% funded, 60% dependent on fundraising. We employ over 20 staff. It's very, very difficult to employ staff and to keep good staff, Greg, if you haven't got a secure financial footing. Now that money will allow us to give a bit of stability to our staff to maybe to increase our workforce and to allow us maybe to reach to other parts of Inishowen where it's not just as easy for them to get to Buncrana.
And I guarantee you the services that you deliver are at a fraction of the cost as if the state were to try and deliver them too. So it represents really good value for money. And to have core funding, which hopefully once it's in place can be reviewed or what have you, to have that in place, it's a great start point. It's not everything, right? But primarily you just want to be caregivers, not fundraisers.
100%.
It's not a fundraising organisation. It's an eye care organisation.
Yeah, 100%. And that funding, we've been lobbying for that funding for a long time. Thankfully, we have a great relationship now with the HSE. And, you know, they see and acknowledge the work that we're doing. As you say, you know, to do what we do, when we set up iCare, we were told a few things. One of them was that this will be a marathon, not a sprint. And that is exactly what it has proven to
there,
be. No, they weren't. And the other thing that we were advised,
it's an ultra marathon, not just the old 27, 28 miles.
Yeah. The other thing that we were advised was never to become a service provider. We were told that in no uncertain terms at the start because of what it would involve. But we had no choice. Yeah. Like there was no choice. There was nothing else there for the children. So, yeah, we spend a lot of time obviously planning and activities and all the rest. And that's what we want to do with our time rather than having to be fundraising. Now, in fairness, our fundraising is community-led, Greg. We are so lucky. You know, we have a few things that we do every year. Everything else, somebody will come and approach us and say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. So we have been supported and sustained and allowed to keep going by the community.
Stay where you are, because I want to talk about iAdult and also the 25th anniversary iCabaret coming up. But I do have to take a break. So I'm in the company now of Doreen Freely, you've just heard. You've also been hearing from Bernie Gallagher. We'll hear more from Bernie and Doreen after we take a short break. Right, so we're in the company of Doreen and Doreen Freely and Bernie Gallagher of iCare. And Bernie, you are the parent of an iAdult service user, and I also remember over the years the conversation sort of being about this sort of cliff edge that used to be there, and correct me if I'm misframing it, but you know, that once someone reached the age of 18, you know, not iCare services such, but just general services, kind of there was not much there.
Right,
yeah. Is that how it was?
It was then, but I suppose I was fortunate in that Connor was a school leaver.
Okay.
And he was referred on to iAdult. And we went from there. And I honestly, I can't explain to you how valuable a service it is. Mm. I actually moved to Buncrana as a result of the service.
Wow, so you followed the service, effectively.
Yeah, indeed I did. Yeah. We lived in Ballyliffin for short of 20 years, but as he was getting older, I just saw the need for things to just be made simpler.
What age is Connor now?
He's 32 years of age.
Okay, so in terms of his interaction, his development, his life, what positive impact has iAdult had on him?
It's had a massive impact in that it's given him independence. It's also given him confidence, which I think is key in these situations. And since we moved, it affords him the chance to walk to his service and walk home from his service and just be part of a community.
And that is brilliant for him.
Yes.
But it's amazing for mums and dads to see their children, whether they're 32 or they're 5, right? They're all our kids. It don't matter. This idea that they go away at 18, But to just see, you know, to the peace it must bring you with the challenges as well, to see him walking to wherever he needs to go, that level of independence, it just must be settling for you.
It's great for me. And actually, I have found, particularly in the last year, I've seen a bit of a role reversal in our house where he's actually looking out for me. I honestly mean that.
So that's so brilliant development.
So it's taught him so much how to care for others, including his mother. So I thank you, God, for that. as well as that, he's a much happier young man. And, you know, he doesn't give me any trouble.
Yeah.
Nothing that I feel on a daily basis spoils my day or anything.
Yeah.
He's a wonderful young man. But I think had we not had that service and the brilliant manager that we have in place at the moment being Agnes, and prior to that we had Liam Gill, with their help and their encouragement, it has brought him so far in that I don't worry about leaving the house and leaving Connor in it. He has been trained so well in safety, security, and all of that.
Yeah,
and he could live quite independently of his mother, but right now, at the moment,
I'm not really sure any of us can live quite independently from our mother, but I understand exactly in the context that you need it.
Okay, there's always going to be a need for supervision there.
Yes, of course.
I'm totally aware of that. But I'm saying overall, the needs have diminished year on year.
Mm-hmm. And just to pick up on what Bernie says there, Greg, you know, the sky is the limit here as far as we're concerned. You know, we have our child service, we have our youth group, we have our adult service, but you'll be more aware maybe than me of the statistics in terms of employment for autistic adults, and it's very, very low. And like, as far as we're concerned, our autistic community, regardless of age or anything else, you know, they deserve every opportunity. They deserve independent living. They deserve housing. They deserve employment. And so we have achieved so much in the past 25 years. There's no taking away from that. But this is a lifelong service as far as we're concerned.
And also, there's an awful lot of people have a role in this. Business owners, the general population, as well, that we sort of need to stop, you know, judging people on certain criteria or whatever it might be, you know.
Absolutely. But Spree Yoga Sport down beside us now have a workability programme, and some of our young adults are using that, and it's just fantastic for breaking down barriers, because our young people are getting an opportunity to go in and do work experience in different places. So it's working out really well, and thank you to Spree for that.
Yeah, indeed. And there's people listening in other parts of the county are going, oh, I wish that was where we are. You know, it's astonishing what you have done in that area. And as you say now, with the view of hiring more and expanding out, but it still is, I mean, a very important part of the county, don't get me wrong. And there are other services in different parts. But every parent of an autistic child or adult listening to us now really should be able to avail of what we're talking of now, shouldn't they, Doreen?
Absolutely, Greg. And, you know, you look at the Blue Stack as well and the fabulous work they do, parent-led also, achieving huge, you know, things all the time. And I couldn't overstate the importance of parent power. Mm. Like, we were a force to be reckoned with 25 years ago, because you know yourself, and any parent out there knows, if there's something that their child needs and there's a way to get it and somebody else is getting it elsewhere. You know, we were so lucky. We predate the National Council for Special Education. I'm a teacher. I taught in the autistic class in Skowleesigan for 7 years, and I'm the ASD coordinator in Crana College now. You know, we established iCare before there was ever a national council, and so we were able to have pilot projects. And I know it's exhausting, and now I suppose it's very hard. Most families need two people working, so there isn't somebody available to be doing the legwork. We were very lucky back in the day, and we were very lucky with Don McDwyer, but I couldn't overstate the importance of parent power, getting these things up and running. And that new group, Special Needs Donegal Parents, they're doing Trojan work.
I'll tell you from my perspective, sitting in this seat, and I talk to a lot of government politicians, opposition politicians, talk about an awful lot of issues. But invariably, if regular people band together, they're unstoppable.
100%.
And thankfully, we have a platform here where we can support people. But, you know, like the surgical lobby, if it ever happens, it was regular doctors, consultants, nurses, GPs that got together. The closing of other services, it's regular people. The group you just talked of, regular people. Yeah. What you have achieved, regular people. And that's where the power is. It's not necessarily... Now, you do, of course, at times need politicians to support or get behind or eventually make the decisions. But I'll tell you, anything big that's been achieved, it feels to me very much like it's people that have provided that. Right, the iCare Cabaret, it's always a biggie anyway. It's coming up on Saturday the 27th, which is actually this coming Saturday at 7:30 p.m. till late, which sounds quite ominous. it's in the beautiful settings of the Inishowen Gateway Hotel, and it's a night not to be missed. It's always a special... I love how tickets are £25, and it's the 25th anniversary, yeah. But that represents fantastic value for money. It's always a big event, and one not to be missed, Bernie. Are there still tickets available?
There are, yeah. But we'd encourage people that are thinking about it to maybe just grab
them. Look it off the pot. Yeah. Let me put it like that. Yeah.
Pick them up and be sure that you're going to be there on Saturday night, because It's going to be a great night. It's great value
for money.
Get the
tickets, but actually be there, because it's great fun.
Important.
Yeah, be there as well. Like, it's not necessarily just about
I'm really looking forward to meeting parents that we would have connected with over the years, maybe some of the founding parents as well, that'll be able to join us on the night. So I can't wait.
Who are you going to be wearing?
Smart casual, if you don't mind.
We're going to be wearing something vintage from our iCreate shop on the main street in Buncrana, Greg, if anybody wants to call in there. There's tickets available there too.
So there's entertainment on the night, there's supper, and there's a live band as well. It's on a Saturday night too, which is great. It is Saturday, isn't it?
Yeah.
Tickets are just €25. That's obviously contributing to the cost of putting an event on this, but also supporting iCare. But to be there to celebrate 25 years, get your tickets, but also go. It's a great night. You know what I mean? It's not just about supporting, it's about getting along and being part of the buzz and part of the atmosphere. And it is, it's a lovely setting.
It's beautiful.
It? Yeah. Loads of parking and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Beautiful, yeah.
All right. Tickets are available at iCare's office or on Eventbrite. I've never used Eventbrite. Never ever used Eventbrite once, but anyway, you can search out the iCabaret with iCare on eventbrite.com. We'll get your tickets at the iCare office. Ladies, anything obviously, listen, we can't pack 25 years into half an hour, but is there anything that you want to mention or you kind of had down that I want to say this while I'm down there?
Yeah, just to say that the tickets are also available in the shop on the main street to save anybody who might be walking, going down to the centre. We have an open day now on Wednesday the 20th, this Wednesday, coming with a photography exhibition, and this is really for the children. But we'd love everybody to call in, anybody who's passing or anybody who's picking up people from school, call into iCare on your way past. It should be a lovely day and we hope that the weather will be kind to us. And also,
is it Wednesday?
Wednesday.
Oh, Wednesday's going to be lovely.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, nice and bright and dry.
That's good. And over the summer, we had the Nationwide cameras down, so look out for us coming up soon on Nationwide. And, you know, to get back to Saturday the 27th, we launched in the Gateway with an Alton concert when we set up iCare. It was a packed house, and we would just love a good, busy house now on Saturday.
Yeah, nice
just
to celebrate full circle us. Moment.
Yeah, be lovely.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Bernie, best wishes to Connor and the rest of the family.
Thank you so much,
and Doreen, keep doing, both of you, what you're doing. It's astonishing what yous are doing, what yous have done, and what those before you have done.
Yeah, exactly.
And how much of themselves they've given, really, to establish what's here right now. It really is truly remarkable. And I'm delighted that there seems to be a strong footing. Doesn't answer all the questions, right? But a strong footing going forward, that
looks
you're not
good.
Rattling the jar constantly and waiting for a grant decision or this, that and that. Go ahead.
One more thing.
I know there's always one more thing with Doreen. Someone messaged me, I hear you've got one more thing, Doreen, on the show today. It's like Columbo.
Once I get started.
Like Columbo, you think he's just finished, but there's one more. I'm only joking, Doreen.
No,
Go ahead.
I just want to thank the committee that we put together, a working committee for the iCabaret night, and I really want to thank them for all their work. I want to thank all the sponsors. We have so many sponsors, and huge thanks to them and to the local artists who are coming along and giving of their time for us again. So thanks, everybody, for everything you do for iCare.
And I would say it's very easy for those people to support such a brilliant organisation. Doreen Friel, thank you so much indeed. Bernie Galligan, lovely to see you. And we'll be back with the weather and more on the 9 till noon show after the break. Julian Heffernan is Director of Communications with Banking and Payments Federation Ireland. Gillian, thank you so very much for your time.
Thanks indeed, and thanks for having me.
Right, we're doing this every year now, and it's really important to get the message out there, because I think really the victims of this really, you know, are coming to age and coming to this situation every year. Almost €9.4 million has been laundered through money mule accounts in the 12 months to June 2025. It's a huge amount of money, and that means there's a lot of people involved in this, Gillian.
Yeah, so I suppose just to put this in context, FraudSmart, which is the fraud awareness initiative led by BPFI, we're launching a major new awareness campaign today. It's to warn young people and their parents in terms of the dangers of money muling, educating them exactly what it is, the very serious consequences of getting involved with it, and also importantly, how to avoid falling victim to it. Now, you mentioned there in your intro, you know, we've published figures today which show that over 9.4 million euros was laundered through money mule accounts in the 12 months to June 2025. And I guess what's significant about this, those figures is that we know from our FraudSmart members that the majority of money mule bank accounts belong to those in the age bracket of 18 to 24 years. And we've even seen cases as young as children of 14 being involved in this.
And I think it's very important that people listening to this show who may not be in that age category but have students at college or in the house, that they have this conversation with them, because ignorance is not a defence, and we've seen that in previous trials. A third of 18 to 24-year-olds have been approached or know someone who's been approached. So it really is quite likely, if not certain, that a young person associated with you knows about this or may have been approached. So it's very important that we sort of hammer home the potential consequences of this, Gillian.
Absolutely, 100%. And I know you'll have many parents listening to the show this morning. You mentioned there, we carried out some research for this year's campaign among 18 to 24-year-olds, and some of the findings of that survey were quite alarming. So, as you said, almost a third of 18 to 24-year-olds say they or someone they know has been approached to act as a money mule. Very concerningly, one in four admitted they'd be likely to consider using their bank account to transfer money on behalf of someone else in return for keeping some of that money. The awareness of the consequences among that age group is quite low. So 31% are unaware that they might be committing a money laundering offence. 35% don't understand that they could face jail time. And 42% are unaware that it could impact their ability to obtain international travel or work visas. We also did some research with the parents, and we found that 60% of parents of teenagers surveyed said they haven't discussed the risk of money muling with their children. So I think what we're trying to do today is hammer home the message to both young people and their parents. You need to start having these conversations. Mm. You need to educate yourselves about this and how it's happening.
Well, let's do that now. Because I think sometimes people hear the words money mule and don't make a connection necessarily with what we're talking about, because it's not really descriptive and it doesn't really say anything to what's going on. So what's likely to happen to a young person? Let's just use that 18 to 24 category. Maybe they're fresh down in college or something. Maybe they're spending all the money on rent and don't necessarily have a socialising fund or what have you. And someone will approach them, you know, with handy money. Doesn't feel like you're doing anything wrong, does it? So what's the likely interaction between the criminal and the individual whose account they're trying to use?
Yeah, so like you say, it's a return to new college term at the moment. It's a very financially straining time for a lot of people right now. So the kind of appeal of easy money is quite tempting. I suppose from a practical point of view, one of the main ways in which we see people getting approached is through social media. So that might be directly through a message on social media, such as Instagram, Snapchat, or potentially, you know, even many students are looking for jobs right now. They might see a pop-up ad or a job advert on a jobs board. And I suppose the commonality here is that you're going to be offered easy money for very little effort. So you'll be told that all you have to do is to let the person send money to your account, and then they'll give you instructions in terms of where to transfer it on. So, and of course, then the sell is that you get to keep a cut of that money. So I suppose to all intents and purposes, at a surface level, it appears quite harmless. You know, I'm just using my bank account, the money's just passing through. But I suppose what people don't fully understand is, one, where that money is coming from and what it's funding from a criminal point of view. And they also don't fully understand the consequences of getting caught in doing something like that.
So almost 9.4 million laundered through money mule accounts. The averages range from 5 to 10,000 euro per case, but I'm presume there could be the bigger amounts there as well. So there's an awful lot of this going on. And how much of it are we actually catching? Do you know what I mean? I wonder how much of that 9.4 million is compared to how much is actually being laundered. It means there's an awful lot of people getting approached to move this type of money.
It does indeed. And, you know, figures from the Guard suggest there's thousands of people being approached to do this. They're taking a very active line with it at the moment. And I suppose it's important. I mean, it is a lot of money. What people, as I said, don't understand is where that money is coming from and what it's being used for. So, you know, we all know people who've been, you know, who've had money taken off them through scam text message or emails, for instance. And it's exactly that same money that the criminals are trying to launder effectively. So it's money that's been stolen from innocent people that you probably know. And on the other side of it, the money that's being moved is being used to fund serious crimes, including terrorism, drug trafficking, even human trafficking. So what we need students and indeed their parents to realize today is that money mules are being recruited by international criminal gangs. There's no getting away from that. And the money mule themselves, they're a vital cog in the operations of these gangs, and they're placing themselves in the middle of a criminal activity, which is why it carries such serious penalties. I suppose the other thing to realize is that, you know, you might do this as a one-off and think, you know, what's the harm? But once a criminal has your account details, it's very likely that they may keep contacting you, and they might want to continue this and keep these transfers up. So you end up getting caught in a cycle that it's very difficult to get out of. And we know of cases where money mules can be threatened physically in order to allow their account to continue to be used by the criminals. So there's some very serious ramifications for this and getting involved in it.
Yeah, for sure. And it's not a nice thing you want on your record either. Obviously, you talked of the risk of fines and imprisonment, but also you would be part of money laundering, and in terms of your ability to move around the world into different countries and what have you, this could have very serious consequences on you into your 20s, 30s and beyond.
Oh, 100%. I mean, look, first and foremost, if you're caught, you can face a prison sentence of up to 14 years and the prospect of a criminal record. And, you know, for young people, I mean, that could essentially ruin the rest of their lives. You know, your bank accounts will be closed. You'll have great difficulty accessing financial services in the future, such as loans or mortgages. You certainly won't be applying for visas to travel to places like Australia or the States, because you'll have a criminal record. And in terms of your future career prospects, they'll suffer too, because with a criminal record, it will be very difficult in terms of finding a job longer term. So, you know, for something which maybe, as I said, appears as innocuous as just letting money move through your account, there are serious penalties for it, and you have to realise what you're getting involved in. And that's really why we're doing this campaign today. So I would really encourage young people or their parents to look at our website, fraudsmart.ie. We've had to run through this quite quickly today, but, you know, to educate themselves and really understand what they're getting involved in and the risks around it.
Gillian, thank you so much for your time. Gillian Heffernan there, Director of Communications with Banking and Payments Federation Ireland. As I say, they're catching people all of the time, and you can't, you know, we're at the point where you can't say, well, I didn't know what was going on. I thought I was, you know, it doesn't really work. All right, listen, have a great day, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9. Stay tuned. John Bresson's next around the Northwest after the news at 12.